I'm Kara Lawrence, and this is Let's Hear It. Today, a chance to meet, learn about, and enjoy the company of Darius DeHaas, who is the very special guest artist of Western Michigan University's Department of Theater and its Next Stop Broadway series. This is a series of three concerts tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. Each show is at 7:30 p.m. in the Williams Theater at the Gilmore Theater Complex. Darius, thank you for joining me this morning here on Classical
Domain. Hi, Kara. It's lovely to be here.
It's lovely just in the last few minutes getting to know you and go back and forth a little bit. My question just a minute ago was how did you come to be the featured performer tonight? And it turns out that Jay Berkow, director of music theater, has just kept track of your career for some time.
I guess so. Yeah, he reached out to me via what, you know, the people do now, via Facebook Messenger.
There you go, yeah.
But he had a song, I believe, that he had written with his writing partner and asked me to be part of that. And then he reached out to me again. This was all during the pandemic. Last year, and asked if I would be willing to come out and be a guest artist here at WMU with that graduating class for their showcase and do that. And I said, absolutely, provided that it could work because, of course, we were all dealing with the pandemic. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for that class because we were still in the thick of it. So everything was sort of put on hold. And it just turned out that this year turned out to be the year that I could come out and join you. And for that, I'm exceedingly grateful. It's been wonderful. I've been telling Emily and Jay and everyone here that, you know, it's such a beautiful, beautiful campus. And it's just so great to perform live.
Oh, yeah.
And to see the hope of the future and all your wonderful students.
You are primarily a music theater performer, actor. You also are known for your voice in television shows like Marvelous Miss Maisel. But the issue with Next Stop Broadway is you do perform as a solo artist, but you're also here to mentor these young people and kind of, if they ask you a question, you need to be ready to say, you know, here's how I did it or here's what I would recommend. Do you feel comfortable in that role? Are you often put in a role to workshop or teach or, you know, do anything other than act and perform?
Well, prior to the pandemic, I had done it to a small degree when the pandemic happened in kind. If that even makes sense, I joined an organization, founding member of an organization called Black Theater United, which was founded, you know, on the death of George Floyd and was our response to, you know, really almost the silence of the Broadway community, really not responding to it. And so we really galvanized our agency. And these were people like from, you know, known from musical theater, like Audra McDonald and Brian Stokes Mitchell and Vanessa Williams and all these wonderful luminaries and me and a lot of wonderful stage managers and sound designers and whatnot. And part of what our mission was in creating equity, diversity, inclusion, belonging, and accountability was being able to, in great part, be able to reach out to the younger generation. And in reaching out to the younger generation, there is the mentoring factor of that and really being able to connect and really being able to connect with a lot of these programs that have internships and whatnot and really examined what those spaces look like if there is true opportunity to be able to progress in mm-hmm. those sorts of situations, and to be able to really listen to the younger generation. And in this time, it's very tricky because the landscape of all this as what we know it is shifting. It's changing. It's expanding. It's confusing. It's also rife with great opportunity, I think, in terms of being able to use your voice even in a more elevated way in terms of how the arts inform our humanity. So I'm very much of the mind of when I'm in these situations at WMU or what have you, and students ask me different questions. Yes, they are challenging, mm-hmm. but I really lead with my heart, and I lead with what I have been observing over particularly the past 2 years, and just try to be able to give as much as I can to them so that they can be able to implement that however they can in their work to be able to move on.
You lead with your heart. It's you trust your instincts and yourself and who you are. Is that related to how you grew up?
Yeah, it is. You know, I've always been a little bit of a loner in terms of, you know, I was the kid who sequestered himself up in his bedroom listening to recordings and acting out scenarios and stuff. You know, I was that theater and music nerd.
You could live in your head.
I lived in my head a lot. And plus, I had the great advantage of having parents who were in the industry. My mother is a singer and also an arts developer. She created the jazz festival, which eventually became the Chicago Jazz Festival. She did these series of concerts that were a tribute to Duke Ellington initially from 74 to 78, and that eventually became the Chicago Jazz Festival.
Yeah.
And then she created a new jazz festival on the south side of Chicago where I was born and raised. My father is the quintessential jazz bassist, jazz sideman, you know, and he played with some of the greats, Chet Baker, Blossom Deary. He was Peter, Paul, and Mary's bassist for a time. He's on a couple of their recordings. And they, you know, met in New York. And by the time I was born, they had relocated to Chicago. And so I was surrounded by the arts. And, you know, so I always had a kind of an idea of how I wanted to move forward, even though if I didn't know what I was doing, my career has always been a lot of jumping into the fire, you know, kind of not really knowing what I was doing, but because I was always taking in so much information, you know, somehow it would, you know, somehow formulate in my brain and body and be like, okay, well, let's try this. Because I listened so intensively. I was a very, very, not, I don't want to say intense child. I wasn't intense, but I really was very into it, very, very into it.
That's a talent, a gift that keeps giving back through your life, right?
Yeah,
You can draw on ways that music has moved you in the past and relate it to now and stylistically and understanding almost instinctively what the song needs or wants.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, you kind of get, for me, I kind of would get ahead of myself because, you know, my mother, when I was born, she started doing a lot of theater. She was in the Chicago company, the National Company of Hair. As well
That's
as
just cool.
right, and she also did a show called "Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope," and I mean, so that's what I grew up with. But before I was born, she sang with my uncle and aunt as a trio called Andy and the Bay Sisters, and their recordings are still very available. Thank goodness they reissued them, and so available for your streaming pleasure. But I grew up on those recordings along with, you know, cash show albums and recordings of other great artists and classical stuff and all, you know, I just listen to everything.
Well,
but
your
yeah.
parents rubbing elbows with actual musicians yeah. that you could meet.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that was the thing. That was what my sister, my older sister, Aisha, who also is in the business, you know, and you know, we kind of thought, well, you know, everyone's parents, you know, have friends in the business and you have these people visiting your house or you go see, you know, these people when they come to town and you just sort of sit and listen to your parents, you know, talking shop with them or whatever, you know, and that wasn't necessarily the case. And when you get older and you're like, gosh, that was a really cool thing to be able to witness in your childhood and to have that exposure and also really the big community element, which bringing it back around to the students and whatnot, you know, because, you know, people come to their passion, whether it's in the arts or whatever, you know, sometimes with what you would see very little exposure or advantages in terms of being able to get, but, you know, but really having that real fire in order to sort of achieve their dreams. And so I really try to stress, look, if you want to do this, you know, you have to, even in these most challenging of times, you know, you really have to believe it. You really have to believe, and there is opportunity out there. And in terms of what we do as mentors, what we do as, you know, sort of, you know, troubadours of song, as we do as, you know, journeymen, performers, actors, or, you know, some people with celebrity or whatever, you know, you really try to convey that sense of, look, you just really keep going for it. You know, don't lose hope.
I want my listeners to know who my guest is here on Let's Hear It. It's Darius DeHaas, who is a special guest artist of Western Michigan University Theater in Next Stop Broadway. You can see Darius perform.
You can say Darius.
At 7:30.
Darius.
Tonight. It sounds great that way, too. The shows are at 7:30 tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at the Williams Theater. Details at wmutheater.com or 387-7222. This is a combined showcase where you will see graduating Western students perform some of the pieces they've prepared to go out and audition with later in 2022. And Act Two basically is a one-man show from Darius DeHaas, with here and there, hopefully, a little student support on
yes.
some songs. We're going to get into some of the specifics of this show, mm-hmm. as well as some of your specific projects that you love and want to talk about and share with us. I feel the need to fill your teacup again, and we can't do that while the mics are live. So we have a musical break possible here, but it needs a little setup. There is a show on Amazon called The Marvelous Miss Maisel. I've seen all of it. It's quite quite the nostalgia fest and a terrifically funny show about a woman who kind of blows up her life in order to become a female comedian in the 1950s or 60s?
Like late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah.
And a very interesting time in our history.
She gets into a lot of different adventures, and later she's on tour, and Shai Baldwin is a singer who is almost a stand-in for some of the great balladeers of the late 50s, early 60s. His name in the character is Shai Baldwin. You are that voice.
Yes. There's
a story perhaps about how that came about, how you were asked to be the voice behind this character and sing the songs that this character sings on the show.
Sure. Would you like it now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, essentially what happened was it sort of kind of fell from out of the sky, it seems. You know, I hate to make it sound so like, oh, well, it's just so much. But it kind of did. I totally wasn't expecting it. They had actually been developing this character for quite some time because, you know, in the process of TV, they, you know, they have to look ahead and see what, how, what the journey of the show, meaning Mrs. Maisel, Midge Maisel, what's going to be the overall arc over. And Amy Paladino Sherman really does have a very clear vision of what the journey of that main character is. And part of that journey was that in her rising up the ladder in show business, she does encounter this famous singer, modeled loosely on Johnny Mathis, and you know, and opens for him on his tour. And when, you know, so they had been, you know, casting for, and they did get down to the casting for it, and they, you know, but they, the actor that they cast, my dear friend Leroy McLean, you know, they needed to, you know, have a voice that sort of was going to be able to sort of give a sense of that, that time as well. And so my friend Janice Siegel
from Manhattan,
from the Manhattan Transfer, was asked by the musical supervisor, Robin Erdang. She's, Robin called Janice and said, look, can you suggest some names for the voice of this character? And I, according to Janice, she gave like maybe four or five names or whatever. And I guess they went down the list and they just happened to call me. And they said, look, we work on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. There's this character, Shia Baldwin. He's sort of Johnny Mathis-like. Do you think he can sound like Johnny Mathis and, you know, and possibly submit some... And I immediately said, no, I can't sound like Johnny Mathis.
You said that?
I said no. And it was funny. I, you know, I was so assured in, you know, I didn't even think about what I was saying, you know, because I knew The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel was this big show, it was a big hit show, and,
yeah,
and all that
Emmys
stuff.
And la la la.
Emmys and all that stuff. But when she said, can you make yourself sound like Johnny Mathis? I said, no. I said, I'll tell you what, I have been told that there are aspects of my voice that do sound Johnny Mathis-like, you know, depending on what I sing. So I'll send you a bunch of recordings via my website and, you know, peruse it and see what you think. And I, you know, she said, okay. And so we hung up and I went to whatever little appointment I was going to. And that was on a Friday. Friday night, I was offered the job. I immediately got on the phone with Stuart Lerman, the music producer, and Matt Shapiro, who was also a producer on the show. And they said, okay, we're starting with Younger Than Springtime. Do you know that song? I was like, yup. And because he was introduced in the, towards the end of the second season.
That's
my and so I said, okay, all right. And he said, well, do you have a key? I said, let me, give me a moment. I'll find a key. And so I found a key, and I was in the studio Monday morning.
They were moving so fast.
Hired on a Friday, in the studio Monday morning. It was so quick. I didn't even have time to think about or get nervous about. I was just like, okay.
That's kind of good.
And here, and that was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
You didn't have to like stew on it for 4 months.
I didn't have to stew on it. I was like, oh, am I going to get the job? And it was great. And, you know, the I cannot emphasize how great that team was, and working with Leroy on the character and him being at all my sessions. I mean, it really was a combination of us joining forces and really fleshing out that character. It was a great gift.
Oh, we are so primed to hear your voice in this recording. I'm speaking with Darius De Haas, who is performing live tonight at the Williams Theater in Next Stop Broadway, which also showcases the talents of the theater majors at Western Michigan University. And the concerts are at 7:30 tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. Details at WMUtheater.com. This is a highlight that came in a later season, and it's one that has caught on with a lot of people just as a song. You know, on its own, away from the show. People love it. No One Has to Know. Here's Darius De Haas.
No one has to know. I think you're wonderful. No one has to know.
my dream come true. Let the world go spinning in space. We'll find a place for two. So no one has to know I want you. No one but you. No one else can tell. I love you. No one but you.
That is the voice of Darius DeHaas, who's right here in the studio with me at Classical WMUK 89.9 FM. Oh, what a wonderful, wonderful voice you have. I'm sorry. It's all I can say.
Thank you.
You bring such realness to it, tenderness, especially in that ballad. And that's a hallmark of, again, someone who kind of has this inner sense of, I know who I am and what I can do. I love that.
Thank you very much.
If you've tuned into this interview a little bit late, Darius has told us some wonderful stories about growing up in a family of musicians and performers, theater performers on the south side of Chicago, who created some institutions there. Your mother's, you know, her efforts led to the Chicago Jazz Festival.
Yes, yes.
And the music you were exposed to growing up, all sorts of influences, as well as, meeting professionals who were coming through town, working in town, and, you kind of, without knowing it, found out what the life is like, what they care mm-hmm. about, what the most important things are in being a performer.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if, at some point, you're absorbing all of this wonderful stuff, and at some point, do you end up taking finding music that your parents don't know about, and just saying, "I love this," and then like turning it around and showing them what your new favorite thing is, and they're listening and going, that's interesting.
Well, yes, that's a word for it. That's an injury. Yeah, I think always generationally, there's always going to be that little bit of a divide. Might be too strong of a word.
It doesn't always circle back.
It doesn't always, but your parents come. My parents were pretty hip in terms of their musical palette. And particularly my mother. But I say this with a lot of love. I mean, there could be a bit of snobism in terms of I was like, you're going to listen to that, because really. My sister loves to tell the story of, my father, would have a gig at night and if my mother was also working, and when she was old enough to sort of babysit me, it was pretty much common for him, them to do their gig. And then my mother would go to my father's stereo system and put on, the Stevie Wonder or the Chaka Khan or who we love. I love Chaka Khan and all of them, and blast the stereo system through his lovely speakers. and have our groove session, so to speak. And then when I got older, when I went to college and everything, I got really into people like Sting and Peter Gabriel and Ricky Lee Jones and all that. But, all of them were very influenced by, jazz musicians or jazz-influenced performers of earlier eras. It was very interconnected.
All of the artists you just mentioned, you mean?
There's a
through line.
Yeah, there's certainly a through line. I mean, sometimes, of course, if I was into... like if I was sort of into Donna Summer or the disco thing. You know, maybe my father would be like, really? Is that what you like? You know? But I really stand by it even more so today. I said, you know, because I'm such a great, I love being a student of performers and singers and how I learned how to sort of create my approach. So it is an amalgam of so many people. I mean, it's what I talk about in the show when I say, look, the voice of Shai Baldwin is sort of, I mean, it's me, absolutely. But it's, you know, he's sort of, I leaned into influences of those great singers from the late 50s, early 60s. And that's what I explore in the show. But I love getting to the point in my life where I don't, you know, I've never been a good imitator of, you know, of anybody. And I really was very, very pointed about finding my voice. And in the best way of using whatever influences I have, even if people say, oh, I can hear a lot of so-and-so in your voice, or like my uncle, mm-hmm. Andy Bay, who is one of the greatest singers in the world, I think. You know, certain people who know his voice, you know, and they hear me sing certain things, they say, oh, you've been listening to Andy Bay. And I love it when people who don't know that we're related, they say, oh, this guy studied Andy Bay. I was like, well, yeah, I did study him, you know, but I didn't even think about it because I just grew up on those recordings. So
have you worked with a famous teacher or someone who did want to change, you know, who wanted to mold you in a certain way that didn't work or hurt your voice?
I was extremely lucky that, you know, when I was in Chicago, I worked with a lovely teacher for a short time at Columbia College, Carol Laverde, who was a lovely classical singer. And I just worked with her for a very short time. But the teacher that I had, and I'm so happy to be able to even talk about him, I had a wonderful teacher named Thomas Parisi, who when I went to school in New York, when I moved to New York, I was 20 years old, and I went to the American Musical and Dramatic Academy and graduated from that program, and that's where I started working with him. And then after I graduated, I stayed with him as a student, and we worked together up until he had to retire in 2018, you know, like the middle of 2000, beginning of 2019, just before the pandemic.
That's a nice.
Yeah.
That's a
wonderful. It was a long stretch. It was a long stretch. And I am the great beneficiary of years of him really trying to listen, you know, really give whatever student, with me and a host of other students, what they needed. And I am very lucky in that he did not say, I don't like what you're doing, we need to, or to say, you know what, you can do this, so we're going to make you into that, you know, and regardless of what you may aspire to do. Mm. Now, he was trained in the classical world.
Technique.
In classical technique, mm-hmm. and all of that. But he listened to what my sound was, and he says, you know, we can apply the technique to whatever you're going to do. And I think he loved the challenge of, okay, you're going to be doing kind of a more rock score. You're going to be doing something that's more jazz. And it kind of opened his eyes to stuff that he wasn't familiar with.
Exciting.
He said,
well,
we can apply this, and we can apply technique to this so that you will be able to sustain and be able to sing this without hurting yourself.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's so important.
Yeah, it was. I cannot emphasize how fortunate I was to have him and to have someone who really believed in me and who really said, okay, this is what you do. This is how we're going to build on that so that in wherever you go, even when you're in situations where people want you to sing a certain way and they aren't able to really convey how you're going to get there, we're going to work on that.
It sounded like you are going to sing songs tonight that you've picked out, and will also actually introduce some of them in a personal story way.
Yeah.
Are some of the songs that go back to those days working with your beloved teacher?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there has to be something that I do. And, you know, it's so funny because, you know, I have so much repertoire that, you know, the hardest thing about doing these types of shows now is like, okay, what am I going to shape here? And, you know, the core of this show was, you know, because, you know, I'll say in all transparency, because, you know, Mrs. Maisel, you know, is such a known factor. I said, well, let me use that and talk about how all these different vocal influences shaped that musical character. But in the bigger sense, it really is sort of a play on what I've done all my life, and in terms of using these different songs, different influences, and even, you know, whether it's from the musical theater sense or from more of the jazz, or I don't really have any kind of art songs, because I used to sing a lot of art songs.
Your Schubert.
Yeah, I used to sing a lot of art stuff, and a lot of the composers that I worked with, who were sort of the more modern art song composers, I sang a lot of their compositions.
I found a Bernstein song online of that you took and actually made a really interesting arrangement of. I consider Bernstein an art song too.
Oh yeah, yeah. I did a whole Bernstein show for his centennial back in 2018. Woo, that wore me out.
I was kidding.
Like, oh my goodness, I'm just getting...
so demanding. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it really is all of that, and I constantly am always, just because it's become such a part of me now, that technique, which, you know, really carries me through so that I can sing, you know, whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And that's what I also try to emphasize to the students. I said, look, with a strong technique and just really taking care of your instrument and being very disciplined, you can sing really whatever you want. You know, you can.
Just don't forget about by taking care, it doesn't mean being paranoid all the time, but just working in
practice. And really leaning into what is it that you're singing? It's sometimes a process of really breaking down what the... not only the style of the song, but really what the phrasing is and what the tessitura of it is, so that when you are working with it, sometimes I'll take a song and I will say, okay, I've got these vowels in it and I'm sort of singing in this area of my voice, so I really need to cultivate how I strengthen that and do exercises that really help that. So when I'm transitioning into this part of my voice or into that part of, that was the work that is the work. And sometimes it is very tedious and sometimes, but I tell you, you know, it took me years to get it with my voice teacher. You know, I was like, oh, that's why he had me doing all these vowels and sort of switching vowel sounds. And he says, look, Darius, it may not sound like you're singing, but when you sing on this word, it's going to sound like A when you're singing this word in this phrase.
I've heard that before.
So it's just, you know, and it saved me. It really, truly saved me because it's hard.
I have heard this from other professional singers, especially in opera, that you can't totally rely on what you're hearing in your head in your own ear.
Right.
It's so different out in the hall.
Yes.
And you kind of have to trust that sounds that they're telling you to make are the ones that are most effective.
You really, really have to trust it. And it's really, you know, taking you back to those basic, you know, tenets of what I think is really good, strong singing. And not everyone has to sing opera or classical, but I think there are great lessons to be gleaned from that.
My guest is Darius De Haas, who is the special featured artist tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday in Next Stop Broadway. This is a series that happens every year that brings in a true pro from this profession and puts them side by side with Western graduating students who will soon be in auditioning situations at the end of as they graduate. And so the first act tonight is a showcase for the students in which you have had a bit of a hand in final preparations mm-hmm. for what they're doing. And act two, Darius, is all yours with a series of songs that are meaningful to you that showcase on your recent work.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, as you're doing so well here on the radio, explaining, you know, what goes into them, what's behind them, and why you care about them. It's all wonderful. Details are at WMUtheater.com. It's a ticketed event, and there's also COVID policy. You'll be able to read that online. Or you could talk to someone at 387-6222 and, go through your trip to Western tonight or tomorrow or Saturday. It's not that I'm not thinking of any more questions. It's that I'm sitting here being grateful for you having been so, so forthcoming.
Thank you.
The only thing I haven't done quite right, I think, is list more of your accomplishments and projects. There are ways to hear you on albums, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Could you? How many albums have you recorded, and can we find them at your website?
Oh, yes. You can absolutely find them at DariusDeHaas.com. And, you know, it's an unusual name, I know. DariusDeHaas.com.
Thank my Dutch
grandparents and heritage for that. There are a lot of it's a big span. You'll see things ranging from my debut recording. My debut solo recording was a album of all songs by the great Billy Strayhorn, who was, you know, for people who may not be as familiar, was probably one of the greatest collaborator with Duke Ellington. And Mr. Strayhorn actually wrote Take the A Train and other great songs like Lush Life and Something to Live For.
Green Dolphin?
No, he didn't write on Green Dolphin Street.
No,
he didn't write that one. There are songs that a lot of people think that he wrote. He didn't write that one.
But definitely Lush Life.
Yeah, he wrote Lush Life, Daydream. That's the name of the album, Daydream, Variations on Strayhorn. And I did, you were talking about Bernstein earlier. My next effort was sort of a dual effort with a wonderful pianist, Mr. Stephen Blyer, who has a wonderful organization called the New York Festival of Song in New York, still going strong. And I did a piano vocal duo album with him called Quiet Please, which, you know, I think helped get me the job on Mrs. Maisel. So just, you know, because really it was just me and him. And it was produced by Jamie Bernstein, who is Bernstein's daughter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Well, so that must have been very special.
It was extremely special. And she is a dear friend. And she's just a great, great, great lady. And I'm very excited for her and her family because, of course, the West Side Story movie revival is coming out. And
I just saw some reviews. It looks really
good. People are very excited about it. I'm very excited to see that. And, you know, of course, the family has been all up in that. And Broadway cast recordings. I did Children of Eden, a show called Children of Eden by Stephen Schwartz. And I had a song on there called Lost in the Wilderness, which a lot of musical theater fans, you know, love that song and
single it out.
Yeah. And oh gosh, a lot of stuff. You know, Dreamgirls. I did a 20th anniversary revival of Dreamgirls, a concert of Dreamgirls, and that's, you know, a lot of people know that. And then there are a lot of shows that I did on Broadway. You know, I did do Rent. I was on Broadway in Rent and with the original company. I'm not on that recording though. I'm very mad about that to this day. Doggone it! But I was an understudy for that company, so you know they didn't need me. But I was there. I promise you, I was there. But I also did these very sort of what some critics say very high tone projects, like Marie Christine, which was, I will say, the very last musical produced of the 20th century. But you know, we had a very short run. But it was, you know, our leading lady was the luminous Audra McDonald. And so I'm on that recording as well. And then, of course, and here's the thing, and I'm going to put it out there, and I'm glad I have it on radio. So the Mrs. Maisel recordings, they listed as Shy Baldwin.
What,
I know,
character?
You made that face. I'm going to tell everybody, Kara made a face.
I don't understand that.
Know, and as a lot of people don't understand, you know, but that's a whole Amazon thing, which... I will not go into, but that's me.
That's Darius DeHaas.
That's me, yeah. Everyone.
Okay, someone doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, that's a whole other thing, and you know, oh boy.
Shy Baldwin is fictional.
He's fictional.
And
he's
Darius
not real.
Is very,
and
very real.
So whenever you see Shy Baldwin, and they released a couple of records, not just the original soundtrack, but also the additional original music, which they list, which. It's basically all the recordings that I did. But, you know, so write Amazon, say, hey.
Yeah, excuse me. someone needs actual credit, not this fake character. That's a shame. Shame on Amazon.
Ooh, goodness.
I will be playing another song of yours here that fits the season. But before we get there... I personally am kind of so sad to hear of Stephen Sondheim's death.
Mm.
I've had the great joy of playing flute in a couple of the pits for Stephen around here, including Into the Woods, which was
wonderful.
One that the theater produced just in September and October.
Yes.
My experience is to work on the flute part and the piccolo and, like, you know, counting and stuff like that. And then from that point to hours and hours of being immersed with his music, it almost is like a trance-like state where I feel like my brain is rewired in the most marvelous way. 'Cause every note starts to have meaning, especially in a show like that where he's using... like a very limited amount of themes that seem to be transformed and mixed up, and you're just like, how did he do that?
Right,
you know, it's such a gift to be able to participate in a big work that has that kind of level of genius to it.
Absolutely.
And I'm assuming you have had Sondheim shows in your rep for a while or have sung songs.
Well, you know, it's so, you know, his shows are the ones that I keep missing. And, you know, very, 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 very early on in my, you know, because I started working professionally when I was 17. And I went to Columbia College, as I mentioned, in Chicago. And, you know, I was able to a certain degree, work outside of the school. You know, sometimes with college programs, you can't work out, you know, just because it's just so hard with the class loads and everything. But we were able to do that. And I had a lot of working professionals as my teachers. And one of the first jobs I was hired to do I think it was Pegasus Players in Chicago, was Pacific Overtures. And I was made to leave the show because the head of the theater department at Columbia College says, Darius, we have already planned our season in school for for you know, the whole student body, and you have already been precast in our shows here.
You were ripped out.
They said, you will. I mean, it wasn't even like, would you consider me? He said, no, you will leave that show and do. And I was like, oh, man. And at the time, I didn't realize. I don't regret having, you know, done the, you know, because I loved doing, because I ended up doing Kiss Me, Kate, and it was a lot of fun and all that. but I missed that opportunity to do. And then I had an opportunity to do the Frogs, and for some reason I couldn't do that. So there were two missed opportunities, and I cannot remember why I couldn't do the Frogs. I just couldn't remember. You know, that has been the thing that I have missed, you know, but I have done Sondheim repertoire throughout my career. And I did have the great opportunity to meet him very briefly outside of his theater, the Stephen Sondheim Theater, and he was absolutely delightful and funny and craggly. And just, he was funny. He was very funny and so lovely, you know, because I was so intimidated because I had the opportunity to meet him before, because, of course, he was a great mentor to so many people. Jonathan Larson, who, of course, they released Tick, Tick, Boom, now the movie, which is wonderful, and know how much of an impact he had on Jonathan Larson's life. And, you know, when I was doing Rent, he would come to see Rent. And of course, it was like he had a force field around.
Sure,
because
sure.
Everyone was so intimidated to approach him.
He's a legend at this point.
We're like, oh gosh, it's Stephen Sondheim. But I finally just got up my courage, because by that time that I actually did introduce myself, my sister Aisha had done Roadshow, you know, which I think is his last original produced show. That they did. It was done at the Public Theater. And so I had an in. I used my sister, basically. I said, look, my sister did your show. And he was so charming and so lovely. And it, you know, the loss, you know, of course, we're all just real, you know, but the thing is, as you so eloquently put it, Carrie, you know, just being able to immerse yourself in a piece that it constantly surprises you and gives you everything. It's sort of like this, you know, beautiful layers that just continue to peel and just how it emotionally impacts you and how it musically impacts, you know, it just really, he constantly, you know, just to find the depths of meaning of what he has left us. And we will always be able to celebrate that.
I love that we are ending this hour by talking about how transformative music can be.
Absolutely.
And art can be. And trying to put into words how it is. And I hope everyone gets the chance to experience that. Even as a listener, you can keep going back and finding new things. And of course, when a great interpreter comes to your town, you should go see them. Darius de Haas is tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at the Williams Theater. That's in the Gilmore Theater Complex at Western Michigan University. Next Stop Broadway is a showcase for both students and the invited guest. Darius, it's been so nice spending time with you today, and you've been so generous. I'm just going to have to play this piece, which is called Let Me Carry You This Christmas. I did listen to it, and it has some special extra audio in there. I think it's just conversational little parts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, because you probably got it off of YouTube.
It's official video, it says.
The official video, yes, absolutely. Yeah, that was my pandemic project. It ended up being my pandemic project. But it was written by Tom Miser and Curtis Moore, who also wrote the original songs, wrote No One Has to Know and One Less Angel for Mrs. Maisel, because I asked them to write me a Christmas song because I love Christmas music. So it was a gift.
We'll have a bit less than 2 minutes. It's just a taste, folks. You'll find much more at Darius de Haas's website. And, of course, look into going to tonight's shows through Saturday at WMUtheater.com.
One, two, three.
You don't have to wrap the presents. I know where the bows are. You don't have to hang each bow and bell. I can play your favorite carols. I'm sure I know which those are. No more gifts to get. The stockings all are set. You taught me to be merry very well.